the 10 major signs, alamat-us-saah, of the last day. Nabi Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam was passing by, and his companions were sitting talking, and he asked, "What are you talking about?" And they said, "We're talking about alamat-us-saah, the signs of the last day." And then he made this statement, that the last day would not come, and then he mentioned 10. And these have come to be known as the 10 major signs of the last day. If I had to choose 10 of my own, I would include this one, because I think this one is one of the major signs of the last day. The time will move faster and faster, and the whole year will pass, and it would appear to have been just a month. And the whole month will pass, it would appear to have been just a week and so on. And anywhere I go, I'm not going to ask you, don't be afraid. Anywhere I go, I ask the people, if you have this perception that time is moving faster, put your hands up. Everybody put their hands up, every single. Two nights ago in Newport, everybody put their hands up, and the Imam did not have it. I said, "Mashallah, the Imam is not, his hand is not up," but then he put his hand up to himself. So I said, this is a sign of danger. It's not time which is moving faster. No. Time in our world is governed by the moon. Allah says, لِتَعْلَمُوا عَدَدَ السِّنِينَ وَالْحِسَابِ. That He's given us the moon for measuring time, the system of time. And the moon has been punctual for thousands and thousands of years. Absolute punctuality, like the train in Switzerland. Yeah. So it's not time that is moving faster. No. In Akhir al-Zaman, it is our perception of time which is changing. And the reason why our perception of time is changing is because our heart is no longer beating in harmony with the rest of Allah's creation. All of Allah's creation operates with a system of time. And in that system of time, there's a mizan, there's a balance. So it operates like a clock. And when we are out of step with that, when this heart is out of step with that, then you see the heart perceiving time moving faster and faster. This for me is a major sign of Akhir al-Zaman. This one. And if the heart is not moving and beating in harmony with the system of time that Allah has created, what is the implication? The implication is, any engineer will tell you that. Noor pervades the entire universe. Allahu Nooru Samawati wal Ard. There's Noor all over Allah's creation. But that Noor cannot enter in your heart. When your heart is not beating in harmony with the rest of Allah's creation. And if Noor does not enter in the heart, all that you have here is a degree from Oxford, like the Prime Minister of Pakistan. All that you have is a PhD from Oxford. But Noor does not enter into the heart, then you are internally blind. And if you are internally blind, forget it. You cannot understand the world in Akhir al-Zaman. What is Akhiru Zaman?
End time.
The end time, very good. You cannot understand the world in Akhiru Zaman if you do not have Nur. But more than that, this verse of the Quran shakes us up. Allah says, Man kana fi hadhihi a'ma, fahuwa fil akhirati a'ma, wa adalla sabil. Whosoever is blind in this world will be blind in the other world as well, and even more misguided. And we do not want to face Allah on Judgment Day in that condition. No? It'll be pathetic, because it's straight to Jahannam. وَلَقَدْ ذَرَأْنَا لِجَهَنَّمَ كَثِيرًا مِنَ الْجِنِّ وَالْإِنسِ. Huge numbers into the hellfire. Why? They don't have nur. They have eyes and they can't see. They have ears, they can't hear. They have hearts and cannot use the rational faculty. أُولَئِكَ كَالْأَنْعَامِ. They're just like cattle. And so I say that this sign is a major sign of Akhiru Zaman. How do we get the heart to return, to beat once more in harmony with the rest of Allah's creation? This is why I like this small gathering, because I can take my time, I can lecture for 3-4 hours, no problem. In the masjid, I have to squeeze everything into 1 hour. Okay? So what do we do to bring the heart back? The answer is, you have to get the heart to return to the moon. To return to the moon. To live with the moon. And when you live with the moon, because the moon is the heart of the system of time, وَيَسْأَلُونَكَ عَنِ الْأَهِلَّةِ قُلْ هِيَ مَوَاقِيتُ لِلنَّاسِ. That the moon is at the heart of the system of time. And to return to the moon means to return to the moon with the Quran. فَإِذَا قَرَأْنَاهُ فَاتَّبِعْ قُرْآنَ. This is first person plural, but allow me to use first person singular. And when I have recited the Quran, فَاتَّبِعْ قُرْآنَ, you must follow that way of recitation. Command. Command, yeah. If we recite the Quran the way Allah has recited it, meaning He sent Jibreel alayhi salam to do it. If we do that, then the heart will once more return to the natural state, Salimul Qalb. And you will no longer perceive time moving faster and faster. I am talking from personal experience. When I was younger, yes, I felt time moving faster and faster. Or when I recited the Quran this way, completing the whole Quran every month, from cover to cover, I no longer perceive time moving faster. I am the proof. You can do it. So if I don't want to ask you to raise your hands, no, not tonight. But if I come back to Birmingham, I'll ask you, do you perceive time moving faster? And that means you're not reciting the Quran. I'm writing this book now. It's almost finished. The Quran and the Moon, Methodology for Recitation of the Quran. It's almost finished now. And in this book we are teaching you, the first juz is Suratul Baqarah. The whole surah, that's the first juz. Whoever it was who cut the surah at 141 and said this is the first juz, he had no authority to do that. And then he chopped the surah a second time at 252. And he said, this is the second juz. He had no authority to do that. No. And Allah has condemned it. Let me give you this passage of Surah Al-Hijr. to wake you up. Because every copy of the Quran, or anywhere in the world you pick up, you see that. The Iranian, the word used in India and Pakistan, Iran, is Sipara. But the Arabs use the word Jews, and plural of Jews, Ajza. So the first Jews, anywhere in the world you go, the first Jews is up to Surah Al-Baqarah, verse 141. Anywhere you go. And the second Jews is Surah Al-Baqarah until 252. Yes? And Allah has prohibited this. وَقُلْ إِنِّي أَنَا النَّذِيرُ الْمُبِينَ. Tell them, O Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam, I am indeed a warner. And when I warn in a way which is plain and clear, no ambiguity. Mubeen. What is the warning? Kama anzalna alal muktasimin. This warning is to be delivered from me. I am sending it down. And this warning is to be delivered to someone, some people known as the muktasimin. Who are they? The Quran tells us who they are. Alladhina ja'alu al-Qur'ana iddin. They are those who divide the Quran arbitrarily. They cut it up without authority for doing that. He, Allah, is the one who divided faraknahu Quran and faraknahu litakra'ahu 'ala nasi 'ala mukthin. So Allah divided the Quran. We cannot divide it. And then came the next ayah. The next ayah is shaking. فَوَرَبِّكَ. He's talking to Nabi Muhammad. I swear by your Lord, O Muhammad, by your Rabb, فَوَرَبِّكَ لَنَسْأَلَنَّهُمْ أَجْمَعِينَ بِمَا كَانُوا يَعْمَلُونَ. I am going to question every single one of them for what they have done to this Quran. Every single one of them will have to answer to me. It shakes you. So no, when we recite the Quran, the first Jews, we recite the whole of Surah Al-Baqarah. Not me, I am not going to cut it at all. I don't have the time to take you all through the Quran tonight. But I'm writing this book, inshallah, it should be finished soon. And this book will correct the mistakes we are making. And if you recite the Quran this way, the British have an expression. The test of the pudding is in the eating. It's a British expression. So if you recite the Quran this way, month after month, and then you no longer have the perception that time is moving faster and faster, it validates. And this is correct. This is correct. And so, when we come to Akhiru Zaman, although these are the 10 that are mentioned, I say these are not the only ones which are major signs. Number one, and they are not given in the order in which they will occur. There is a big word in English, chronological order. In order, in time. We do not know the order in which these signs will occur, but we can use our reasoning faculty. And the first one, therefore, mentioned is Dajjal, Al-Masihud Dajjal. And the second is Gog and Magog, Ya'juj and Ma'juj. And the third is the return of Nabi Isa, alayhi salam, the son of Mary. And number fourth is Dukhan, or smoke. And number five is Dabbatul Arq, or the beast or the creature of the earth. And number six is the sun would rise from the west. And number seven, eight, and nine, three earthquakes. But these are earthquakes in which the earth will sink down. and swallow what it swallows. And this is known as a khas. And the plural of khas is khusuf. Mm. One in the east, one in the west, and one in Arabia. And number 10 is that the fire will come out of Yemen. And that fire will drive people to their place of assembly for judgment. I like this one very much. I gather the Saudi regime doesn't like this one at all. A fire will come out of Yemen and drive people to their place of assembly. Now then, we have to determine which of these are muhkam and which are mutashabiha. And there is no law, there is no book. You have to use your thinking process. Which one is to be understood literally, and which one has to be interpreted in order to be understood? Let us begin with the sun rising from the west. This is the easiest one of all. Will the sun literally rise from the west one day? Or is this to be understood as mutashabiha, therefore to be interpreted? This is the question. Who will answer that question? Anytime you're looking for knowledge, the first place to search is in the Quran. That's right, the Quran. You can't go wrong. And in the Quran, what does Allah say? He says that the sun rises from the east. Yes? And Ibrahim alayhi salam then asks the king, why don't you cause it to rise from the west? My Lord causes the sun to rise from the east. You couldn't get a plainer statement than that. Why don't you cause it to rise from the west? So from this verse of the Quran, we know that a western sunrise is a false sunrise. And therefore this is mutashabiha. The sun rising from the west is a false sunrise. It is a sunrise that will attempt to replace the truth. To replace the truth which has come from Allah. And if I ask you, how old are you? I believe every single one of you will give me your date of birth and your age in accordance with the sun. I was born on the 10th of January. I was born on the 16th of April. And by that, I'm 30 years of age. I'm 35, I'm 40. Every single one. And you do that because the false sunrise has taken over from you. The false sunrise. When Allah says in the Quran that you must count the years by the moon, لِتَعَلَمُ عَدَدَ السِّنِينَ وَالْحِسَابِ. So you should not be counting the years by the sun, you should be counting the years by the moon. Anyone differs with me? When the truth came to Makkah rejected it. Because when you depart from the system of time that Allah has given, it affects the heart. Yes, it affects the heart. What Makkah did was, they wanted the lunar year to synchronize with the solar year. So and they remained with 12 months. Allah gave 12 months, so this year we stay with 12 months for 1 year. But every third year, they would add an extra month so that the lunar year would synchronize with the solar year. And you know what Allah said about that? He said that is the road to increasing kufr, not just kufr. Innama nasi'u ziyadatun lil kufr. Playing around with time like this and corrupting it. And so only the young people in Makkah, the young ones, accepted Islam. The slaves accepted Islam. But the barons and the lords of Makkah, they rejected. Because their hearts were corrupted. And guess what this false sunrise has done? You'll be surprised if I tell you. The false sunrise has told us that yes, a year is comprised of 12 months. But now, a month has nothing to do with the moon. A month can have either 31 days, or 30 days, or 29 days, or 28 days. Did you know that? Were you aware of that? And guess what happened when we accept that? And we abandon the moon. إِنَّمَا النَّسِيُّ زِيَادَةٌ لِلْكُفْرِ. When we abandon that Allah has given, and we embrace the false sunrise, we are damaging our hearts. This is the false sunrise. I've given you only one example. What the false sunrise has done to the system of time. And I can give you endless examples that the false sunrise has come to destroy the truth. The truth. Okay? And since you are born in Britain, you have an advantage. Since you are born in Britain, you have an advantage over your brothers in Egypt. You have an advantage over your brothers in Bangladesh. You have an advantage over your brothers in India and Pakistan. Because you know this society now. You know this civilization. And you hence are able to understand what is happening in the world. They are living an innocent life. They don't know what, they believe this is heaven. This is heaven. Who wants to go back to Egypt? Huh? You must be crazy. This is heaven. Egypt is hell. You would be able to go back and tell them. No, this is ziyadatun lil kufr. This is the road to increasing kufr. So we do not accept the view that the sun can literally rise from the west, because that would be in conflict with what Allah has said in the Quran, that my Lord causes the sun to rise from the east. Why don't you cause it to rise from the west? We therefore say that the sign of the sun rising from the west has to be understood and interpreted. And this is our interpretation. And when you interpret the Quran or you interpret the Hadith, you must say, Allah knows best. And only Allah can confirm the interpretation. So you never divide the Jama'ah. You never have boxing matches over interpretation. Good, I want to stop here and hear what are your views on this sun rising from the west. Let me enjoy the moment for a while. You are thinking people, aren't you? You think. You know Dr. Iqbal, the famous Pakistani scholar, he said this Ummah stopped thinking 500 years ago. So I have come to Britain to invite you to think. Yeah. Any comment? We've taken only one so far. We still have 9 more. But tonight I can take my time. Eh? I have enough time. We have one Egyptian here. Any more Egyptians? No more Egyptians, okay. Nobody any has a comment to make? Sebastian? You're still thinking. Yeah?
I originally thought it might be something to do with electricity or something, like the sun rising. I thought maybe it had something to do with light or something, just like the discovery of like electricity, of how it's like changed the world and stuff.
Proper methodology is to always show respect for the Quran. Absolute truth is located in the Quran. So you must first go to the Quran and then go elsewhere. You see? That is proper methodology. And when we go to the Quran, look at what the Quran says. My Lord causes the sun to rise from the east. Why don't you try to get it to rise from the west? It couldn't be plainer than that. And yet, we have huge numbers of Muslims who are convinced that the sun will literally rise one day from the west, and they have NASA supporting them, and they say it's a new North Pole and sun. Like the theory that the earth is flat. And they are bombarding me for every single direction with emails and so on. The earth is flat, the earth is flat, the earth. Quran says the earth is flat. So I said, if the earth is flat, is it flat here where I'm standing? Yeah, it's flat everywhere, Sheikh, everywhere it's flat. I said, okay, then would you be willing to join with me? Let's travel. If the earth is flat, it must have an end somewhere. It cannot go endlessly. I want to travel to the end of the earth. Would you come with me? Nobody's accepting my invitation. I said, if I travel from where I'm standing, don't tell me to go to the North Pole. Nonsense. If the earth is it flat here? And if I travel from here and I keep on traveling and I return to where I started, then your theory about the earth being flat is refuted. Simple. Proper methodology is to go to the Quran. And the Quran delivers many ayat on the subject. So now we finish the first one, that the sun would rise from the west. I didn't take Dajjal, I didn't take Gog and Magog, I didn't take Return of Nabi Isa alayhi salam, because you know this subject very well, most of you. Number two, Dukhan. And this is the surah of the Quran, Dukhan. And we have to decide whether smoke, Dukhan, smoke, is it something muhkam or mutashabih? Mutashabih. It is to the Quran we must turn. Will there come a day when the whole sky will be filled with smoke? Is that possible? What does the Quran say? Now, there's one surah of the Quran which is different from every single other surah of the Quran, in that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala repeats one ayah 31 times. Which surah? Suratul Rahman. فَبِأَيِّ آلَاءِ رَبِّكُمَا تُكَذِّبَانِ is repeated how many times? 31 times. So I really have to be sleeping and snoring, not to be alerted He's knocking on my head 31 times, and I still don't register nothing. Maybe that was too much biryani I ate. He is alerting us that in this surah there is knowledge you have to look for and search for it. We don't have the time to do Suratul Rahman tonight. But in Suratul Rahman, there is an indication that Allah is going to deal with two people, both of whom are evil. And who are the two? People who reject the truth, people who have no belief in the hereafter, no, a godless people, tukezzibun. And who are the two people? Ya ma'ashar al-jinni wal-ins. They are human beings and jinn. And I think Britain is already inundated with hordes and hordes of evil jinn. Yes, I believe that. Because this country is witnessing the collapse of religion in this country. That church was there for hundreds of years. Generation after generation prayed in that church. The churchyard has a cemetery. And then people stopped coming to church. And they stopped paying for the maintenance and upkeep of the church. And now around the whole of Britain, one by one, the churches are being put up for sale. Some are lucky that we buy them, but the rest go to McDonald's hamburgers and Kentucky Fry and Pizza Hut and Bingo Hall, and that's where the church is going. And as religion collapses in this country, and people live a godless way of life, shaitan takes over. And when shaitan takes over in this country, he has his agenda. Oh yes. But when shaitan takes over in this country, they're going to live like a people who have been driven to madness by the touch of shaitan. So you can close your eyes and you can say, in this country you're going to have an epidemic of mental illness, of what is it called now?
Depression.
When people start forgetting things.
Huh?
Dementia. They're suffering from dementia. And they're suffering from something worse than that. It's called, you don't even know your own children. What is it called?
Amnesia.
Not amnesia, it's a disease. Amnesia is to forget.
Parkinson's
disease, yes, but it's another name. When one person in the family is stricken with that disease, you don't even know your own children. The whole family, the whole khandan is affected by that one person. You could never leave that person alone. The whole family now is tied up. So what they do, they send it and put it in a home for mentally ill people. That's what they do. This country is falling apart because shaitan is taking over. This country has done more evil in the world, more evil than most other countries in the world. This country has done it. And there is a huge abundance of jinn here, evil jinn. Yeah. If I had the time, I could have lectured to you. This is Monkey Town. And Allah says in Surah Ar-Rahman, سَنَفْلُغُ لَكُمْ أَيُّهَا الثَّقَلَانِ. Just one small ayah, that's all he needs. I'm going to deal with both of you. who are laden with sin. The jinn and the human beings. And when Allah deals with them, this country is gone. This country is finished. And how will he deal with them? Nursalu alaykuma shuwazun min nar wa nuhas fala tantasiran. I'm going to send against you a flash of fire, and it will be followed by smoke. And when that happens, you have no one to help you. Me, I understand that clearly. That's the big war that's coming. And that has to be a nuclear war. Nabi Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam spoke about that war. And he said, you know about the mountain of gold? You know about the mountain of gold? If you don't know, well, you've got some homework to do. They're going to fight for the mountain of gold. This is Sahih Bukhari. And he said that 99 out of every 100 who fight for that mountain of gold will be killed. So this cannot be conventional war. This has to be a war using weapons of mass destruction. That's nuclear weapons and thermonuclear weapons. And so I have come to the conclusion that the Dukhan is around the corner. When nuclear war takes place, the mushroom clouds that come from those nuclear weapons will block out the sunlight. Block out the sunlight. And there are differing hadiths on the subject. The Christians have their own views on the subject about how many days there'll be no sunlight, the Christian eschatology. And our eschatology also has some, but nobody touches the subject. I've never come across anybody lecturing on this subject. And so my view is that Dukhan is not to be interpreted. No, it is literal. Literal. There will be literal smoke, meaning the mushroom clouds from nuclear explosions, and it will block out the sunlight. And Allah knows best. Any comments?
Would you say, in relation to the moon earlier, the UK is on a higher level of kufr, the fact that they tamper with the British summertime and the daylight saving hours?
My age is now 80 by the moon, and the hearing is declining. And that's not always a bad thing, when the hearing is declining. I have to get the hearing aid. So you're going to have to speak a little louder.
I was just saying, in relation to the moon earlier, would you say the UK, the fact that they tamper with the summertime and the daylight saving hours throughout the winter times, would you say that's a higher level of kufr, like you mentioned?
No, the ziyadatun lil kufr is when you interfere with the system of time, in the sense of dislocating your relationship with the moon, because the moon is at the heart of the system of time, not the sun, the moon. And so it is the Arab system of adding 1 month, and the Roman Catholic Pope who gave us modern Western civilization. Amazingly so. I mean, this man must be crazy. I don't know how he got away with it. He says a month could be 31 days. How did they didn't throw him out of the Vatican? And a month could be 30 days, and a month could be 29 days, and a month could be 28 days. And the whole rest of the world accepted it like sheep. But daylight saving time and sun does not appear to me to affect the moon. No, yeah. Any comment on Dukhan? Okay. I have a very docile audience tonight. Either you're still thinking or some of you are scared of me. I don't know why you're scared of me.
I have just one question. Yes. Regarding this matter. You know, why Britain is more blessed than the third world countries like India, Pakistan? If you're saying that, you know, the Shaitan is overtaking this country, why this country is more blessed than the third world
countries? In what way is this country blessed, tell me?
Like, you know, they have all kinds of facilities, like, we have all living facilities here, we have good living here.
You have, this is the, I think the Prime Minister just reminded us, this is either the fifth or sixth most wealthy country in the world. And when you have wealth, you can do many things that poor people can't do. Now, did the wealth come to this country through barakah from Allah, or was it shaitan? Can you answer that question? Have you studied it? Have you studied how this country become wealthy?
I know they have ruled all over the world.
The answer is, they have stolen the wealth of the world. They are thieves. You must call a spade a spade. They have stolen the wealth of the world through riba. The banking system and the monetary system, but we have the brains of donkeys. We don't study this subject. Yeah? When I went to Pakistan to study at the age of... I went to Egypt at the age of 21 in 1963. And I spent 1 year at Al-Azhar. And then I left Al-Azhar. I left Al-Azhar to go study in Pakistan. And that was the best decision I ever made in my whole life. I went to study with a great scholar in Pakistan, Maulana Dr. Muhammad Fazlur Rahman Ansari, rahimahullah. The Pakistani rupee at that time was $1 would give you 1 rupee and 75 paisa. Huh? That was 1964. $1 was 1 rupee 75 paisa. At that time, there was poverty in Pakistan already. Great poverty, because the British had been ruling over India for how many years? Yeah. And today, $1 is about 140, 150 rupees. And if Pakistan ever makes the mistake to try to get out of the hole in which they are, as slaves today, just try to get out, the rupee will go to 1,000. And this country will remain rich. Yes, this country is rich. Well, how did this country become rich? Stealing the wealth of the world? If you work, yes, and you earn your livelihood on the basis of your wealth and your intelligence and your scientific know-how and so on, that is halal. That is halal. We don't have any problem with that. But when you have a monetary system, when I use the term monetary system, they don't even know the meaning of the word monetary system. And yet they are maulanas and muftis, and they're giving fatwa. Forget the ones who graduated from Oxford. I'm talking about our scholars. They don't even know what's the meaning of the word monetary system. And they've never studied the banking system. Both the monetary system and the banking system have been used to rip us off. Rip us off. I have enough time to talk about Pakistan's predicament now, but our topic is the 10 major signs of the last day. So let's leave now. We've done two so far. The sun rising from the west, and we said this is not muhkam, this is mutashabih. We have to interpret it. But the other one, the dukhan, we say no, this is literal. This is not to be interpreted literal. Now we go to number three. Dabbatul Ard. a beast of the earth, Dabba. Dabba is a beast, something that walks. So, if I am to try to understand what is Dabbatul Ard, where do I go first?
Quran.
That's right! That's right! You have to go to the Quran. And when we go to the Quran, it's a very complex thing now, because there are only two references in the whole Quran to Dabbatul Ard. Two. And one of them says about Dabbatul Ard that when Allah causes this Dabbatul Ard to emerge, the Quran was not sent down with punctuation. No. And the Arabs didn't need punctuation. No. The Quran that we now have, an Arab normally wouldn't read a Quran like that, with the fatha and the kasra and the dhamma. Yeah? But this was put in by human beings. And any time a human being is doing something, he can make mistakes. And here's one. In this one, Dabbatul Ard, when it emerges, it says tukallimuhum, that he will speak, Dabbatul Ard will speak to mankind. But if you change that punctuation, you can become taklimuhum, that Dabbatul Ard would wound you, cause damage to you. And obviously when we look at these two, this one is the one that is more harmonious with the subject. So you have a problem now with punctuation of the Quran. So now let's go to the other reference, only two in the Quran. Nabi Sulaiman alayhi salam is the Khalifa. He is the head of state. And this is a Khilafah state in Jerusalem, founded by his father, Nabi Dawood alayhi salam. And it is the ruling state in the world. And he is a prophet and he is a king. And then one day, Allah chose to test him, give him a test. Or rather, to cause him some distress. And here's what Allah says. Surah al-Sad, I believe. وَلَقَدْ فَتَنَّا سُلَيْمَانِ And we tested Sulaiman. وَأَلْقَيْنَا عَلَى كُرْسِيهِ جَسَدْ And we placed a jasad on his throne. We leave the word jasad for a while. ثُمَّ أَنَابْ If he's seeing someone sitting on his throne, and if this is literal, and you are the ruling power in the world, you are the king, you'll take that fellow and throw him out of the window. What right do you have to be sitting on my throne? Huh? I am the king. He doesn't do that. So this is not literal. This is a vision. Allah is showing him a vision. ثُمَّ أَنَابَ And he turns, he recoils from this vision with repentance from Allah. Scared. قَالَ رَبِّكْ فِرْلِي وَهَبْ لِي مُلْكًا لَا يَنْبَغِي لِأَحَدٍ مِّن بَعْدِي If you want to ask something from Allah, you first ask for forgiveness. It's not that he committed some sin, no. It's just the method, that if you want to ask for something, first ask for forgiveness. So you make istighfar. قَالَ رَبِّكْ فِرْلِي He said, Oh my Rabb, kindly forgive me. وَهَبْ لِي mulkan la yanbaghi li ahadin min ba'di, and grant that none can inherit my kingdom. And grant that none can inherit my kingdom. In other words, he has interpreted this vision. He's interpreted this vision that this fellow sitting on my throne is a very evil being, and he wants to inherit my kingdom. I don't want that. So I prefer that my kingdom should collapse than rather than he should inherit it. Who could that be sitting on the throne? An evil being who wants to inherit Holy Israel and rule the world from Jerusalem as an evil being. Who can that be?
Dajjal.
A Dajjal, of course. Dajjal. So when as soon as he made this dua, Allah accepted the dua. And when he died, Israel collapsed. And from that day to this day, Holy Israel has never been revived. What we have today is an imposter. This was the dua of Sulaiman alayhi salam, that none can inherit my kingdom after me. But there's another meaning to it, that there should never be another kingdom like mine. So even if he were to establish another kingdom, it must not be equivalent to my kingdom. Nabi Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam once told his companions at the time of Salatul Fajr, he said, last night I had a wrestling match with Shaitan and I overpowered him. And I was going to tie him to the pillars of the masjid. And when you came to the masjid, you would have seen him tied to the pillars of the masjid. But then I remembered the dua of my brother, Sulaiman alayhi salam, and I had to release him. If he had tied him to the pillars of the masjid, then this Islamic state of Medina, this Khilafah state, would then have had a comparable status to that state in Jerusalem. So he released him. When Sulaiman died, however, something else happened. We turn from Surah As-Sad and we go now, I think, to Surah As-Saba. The jinn who were ordered to work for Sulaiman and who were shayateen and who were in chains did not know that he was dead. This is what Surah As-Saba says. And so they kept on obeying someone sitting on the throne, holding on to his staff. The commentators of the Quran, many of them say, Sulaiman alayhi salam died while sitting on his throne. And nobody knew he was dead. And we don't know how long, how many years he kept on sitting on the throne, holding on to his staff. And the jinn did not know he was dead. Until Dabbatul Ard came and consumed ta'akulu min sa'atahu. And this has been translated and explained. And they nibbled like termites on the bottom of his staff. This is what you find in the tafsir. And when the staff lost its balance and collapsed, then the body of Sulaiman alayhi salam collapsed. And then the jinn got to know he was dead. But this is false. If you are the king, don't you have to eat? Huh? Will they not bring food for you to eat? Don't you have to go to the toilet? Huh? This is wrong. If you are dead and you're sitting on the throne, within a short period of time they would know you were dead. So it's not that Sulaiman alayhi salam died while sitting on the throne. No. Rather is that the jinn, everybody knew he was dead. Everybody knew he was buried. The jinn, because they are in another world of space and time and they are in chains, they did not know. And they're seeing someone sitting on the throne, holding on to the staff. And they thought it is Sulaiman. Because while holding on to the staff, he's able to deceive them. But this business of termites coming and nibbling at the bottom of the staff is false. I am not a scholar of the Arabic language, so when I confront a problem, I go to those who are scholars, particularly of the Arabic of the Quran. So I went to two scholars. One is a PhD in Arabic semantics, and the other is a PhD in the Quran, the Arabic of the Quran. Two of them. And I asked them, this is min sa'a. The word for staff is sa'a, with sod. And this is min sa'a, with seen. What is the meaning of min sa'a? The Dabbatul Ad comes and they consume the min sa'a. And both of them told me, min sa'a is your walking stick. This is the highest caliber of scholarship in the language of the Quran. And they said to me, min sa'a is just walking stick, staff. No, I was not comfortable. It was not adding up. And finally, I realized that min sa'a is not the walking stick or the staff. Min sa'a is something located in the staff. It is a miraculous property within the staff. The staff of Musa alayhi salam had it. Throw the staff, it becomes a snake. Hit the rock with the staff and the water came out. Hit the sea and the sea parted. And the staff of Sulaiman alayhi salam is like that. That with this staff you can intervene in the system of time. And you can get images of Sulaiman who is dead. Images of Sulaiman can be presented walking and talking and moving while you're holding the staff. And the jinn were deceived. And they're still deceived up to now. And so, Dabbatul Ard is not termites coming to nibble. Dabbatul Ard is something which destroys. The word ta'akul means to eat, ta'akul, but here it means to consume. It's something which will destroy the inner miraculous quality of the staff. So I'm not looking for some animal walking on four legs. No. This word of use of the word da'ba is here mutashabiha. And my understanding is we are facing it now. The da'ba which is destroying the internal heart of the staff is the electromagnetic waves which are now inundating all the cities of the world. In consequence of which you now have this for your motor car, GPS, except for Siraj, everybody else uses GPS. Your wireless computer, the cell phone towers and the cell phone that you're using, you can check it out with your children. Check it out with your children. When a child is 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years of age, that is the age when the memory is most powerful. At that age, the child can memorize the Quran. And I am coming tonight to tell you that the tomorrow is coming when no child who grows up in the city will ever be able to memorize the Quran. Because dalbatul ad taklimuhum is damaging the memory. The only child who will be able to memorize the whole Quran is the one who lives in a place where you can't use a cell phone. This is in my book, Dajjal, the Quran, and the Jasad. I have not taken up the word Jasad. That book has not yet arrived in London. It should come soon. But all my other books, I think we have at the back here. This one has my analysis of the Dabbatul Ard. It's called Dajjal, the Quran, and the Jasad. So I have already taken a lot of time. I've dealt with the sun rising from the west. I've dealt with Dukhan. And I've dealt with the Dabbatul Ard tree. You want me to continue? Huh? The next three are the three khusuf, the earth sinking down and swallows what it swallows, one in the east, one in the west, and one in Arabia. The geologist is the one who will have more facts at his fingertips to provide you with the information that we are living at a time of intense, they call it seismic activity. And there are many parts of the world which are in grave danger of massive earthquakes. Our subject is not so much the one in the east and the one in the west. Our subject is more concerned with the one in Arabia, a third one. Why? Because this will validate the claim of the Imam that he is indeed Imam al-Mahdi. That a Khalifa would die, and then there will be disagreement concerning succession. And Hizb al-Tahrir, which is a very famous and well-respected organization, Hizb al-Tahrir will have their roots in Palestine. Hizb al-Tahrir holds the view that because the hadith uses the word Khalifa, it indicates that the Khilafah state will be returned, will be restored before the Imam comes. And my view is different. I say that when Allah's messenger used the word Khalifa here, he's referring to any king. And in my opinion, it is a Saudi king. I gave this interpretation about 25 years ago. And I'm now surprised to see how widely it has been accepted. Perhaps when Salman dies, then Muhammad bin Salman will be crowned as king. And then the British expression is that all hell will break loose in the Saudi royal family, because he already faces stiff opposition, this reckless young man. So the Prophet is saying that a king would die, and then there will be disagreement concerning succession. We don't know how long that could last. It could last for a long time. But during that period of turmoil, of disagreement concerning succession, someone will come out of Medina and hurry to Mecca, and that is the Imam, Imam al-Mahdi. And the people will force him to accept the bay'ah, the oath of allegiance, at the Kaaba. As soon as he proclaims that he is himself the Mahdi, we have a problem. How will we know whether this is the real Mahdi or the Mossad and the CIA Mahdi? Because the Israeli Mossad and the CIA obviously would have a Mahdi in the waiting. Yes? So how will we know? I don't think the Shia would be able to recognize it. I think they'd be taken for a ride. But the rest of us have to tell our Shia brothers, be careful. This could be a CIA Mahdi. The proof that he is indeed the Mahdi is not some eclipse and sun. The proof that he is indeed a Mahdi is that an army will come to attack him from Sham. And as that army is coming down and passes Medina on the way to Mecca, the earth will open and swallow that army. That is the third of the three khusuf. And so we say this is very important for us, because this will confirm and validate his claim that he is indeed the Mahdi. Then there is the sun, there is a fire which will come out of Yemen. And we have to decide, is this muhkama or mutashabiha? Is this a real fire, or is this to be interpreted? I am not persuaded that it's going to be a real fire. And I say, if we have to interpret it, then I'm talking about a revolutionary movement which will emerge out of Yemen. And when a revolutionary movement emerges out of Yemen, it will sweep everything before it. As it moves towards Mecca and Medina and Arafat. The Saudi decision to wage war on Yemen 5 years ago was not only a foolish decision, but a reckless decision. And they now realize 5 years later that they have not been able to defeat Yemen. And they are looking bad. And now they're looking for a way out. They're looking for a way out, how to get out. The United States can't help them. Britain can't help them. NATO can't help them. So who do they have to turn to help them now? Imran Khan can't help them now. The only person who can help them now is Putin. He's the only one. Because if there is going to be an accommodation in Yemen that allows the Saudis to withdraw without losing too much face, Iran has to agree. Iran has to agree. Then Iran can put pressure on Yemen. And that's what's happening now. Russia is now intervening to try to see what they can do to help the Saudis to get out of the hole in which they are. But what the Saudis have done for these last 5 years is, in my opinion, they've started the fire. They have started the fire. And you cannot extinguish this fire now until the fire comes out and devours, drives them to their place of assembly. So I want to stop here now, because Dajjal, Gog and Magog, and Nabi Isa alayhi salam are big subjects, very big subjects. And I have lectured extensively, I have written extensively on these, so you'll be familiar with them. Any questions?
The new world war, and you mentioned Arabia, the earth will open up and swallow the whole army. If you talk about a chronological manner about the two events, which is most likely to happen before, of the two? Because if the new world war... that is beyond me, yeah. All that I can say
is that the Great War is likely to occur soon. How soon, I don't know. I have had so many dreams about nuclear war. 2014, that I was expecting the nuclear war by 2016. Okay? But Allah, in His kindness, helped us. If Hillary Clinton had won the elections in December 16, I think we would have had the war ready. But Trump won the elections, and he was not one of the boys. He was an outsider. And they can't trust him. They could trust Hillary, but they can't trust him. And since he became the president, they've been doing everything they could possibly do to remove him. No president of America has faced more efforts to remove him than Trump. And the greatest nightmare that they have is that he can be re-elected next year. And he will be re-elected next year if the Turkish invasion of Syria succeeds. There's a deal between Trump and Erdogan. Of course, they're working in tandem with each other. And Trump withdraws the American troops, abandons the Kurds, so that Turkey can move in. Okay? And if this succeeds, then Trump will be re-elected. Yes. Trump will be re-elected, yeah. Any other questions? Yeah.
I wanted to ask two things if you don't mind sharing. The first one, I just wanted to just touch upon, you know, we spoke about a river. You know, living in the Western world, living in the UK, with the cost of living, the house prices, and how much an average person earns, how do you avoid it?
I have stopped attempting to teach the subject of riba for individuals, the micro, because the sun is now setting. This is far less important than the macro. I devote my attention now how to get Pakistan, how to get Egypt out of the slavery. Okay? I have the opinion, a good opinion of the new Pakistani Prime Minister. I think he's much better than those who came before him, who were thieves. I don't think he's a thief. I had a good opinion of President Morsi. I think he's a sincere man, but he made mistakes. Oh yes, and Egyptians should not be annoyed with me when I point out the mistakes that he made. I still have a good opinion of him. Okay. The situation as now obtains is that most of the non-European world, Africa, Asia, Latin America, now have debts that they cannot possibly ever repay. And these are all debts with interest. You now have to borrow money to pay the interest. That's what Pakistan just did. And to get the money to pay the interest to the IMF, they had to fire the finance minister and replace him with an IMF man. And fire the governor of the National Bank, Central Bank, and replace him with an IMF man. So the first step that this new government of Pakistan has made to try to get out of the hole is to put the foot back into the hole deeper than it was before. So this is where I have to teach the subject of riba, not how to buy your house. That is not important to me anymore. This is more important. The Darul Uloom does not teach the subject. Al-Azhar doesn't teach the subject. Al-Azhar even gave the fatwa about 100 years ago that bank interest is not riba. That was Sheikh Muhammad Abdu. Bank interest is not riba. And all the ulama of Azhar have followed that since that day. Bank interest is not riba. What do we do? How do you deal with the situation? That's what we need Islamic scholarship for, on riba. The answer is that the moral law is the highest law. Yes. And the riba that we are paying now is oppression. This is permanent poverty, we can't get out of this. So, by arguing that the moral law is the highest law, we can decide we will no longer pay any interest. Stop. This is a unilateral decision. We're not negotiating with you. We're not paying any interest anymore. Now, what about the capital sum that we borrowed? Allah says in the Quran about the moneylender that if he gives up the riba, falakum ru'usu amwalikum, falakum ru'usu amwalikum, you are entitled to the return of the principal sum. So we say to the West and to the IMF, yes, we will repay the capital sum which we borrowed. But human rights supersede economic rights. Our people need food. Our people need shelter, basic necessities. So we will repay the capital sum on the basis of our capacity to repay, whether you like it or you don't. Because human rights come before economic rights. What will they do with us? The next morning, the Pakistani rupee will be like the Venezuelan Bolivar. Next morning. This is the price we pay for being stupid. Yes. This is the price we pay for being stupid. I wish I could use a harsher language than that. For people who have brains and they don't use their brains. And they accept this bogus and fraudulent and haram money from Monkey Town. That's what they've given us. This bogus monetary system has ripped us off. What you have to do is return to the Quran. And the Quran tells us what is money. Yes. The Quran tells us that money is dinar and dirham. A gold coin and a silver. And when I teach that, what do they do? They close the door of the masjid on me. This man is dangerous. That's what they do. They close the door on the masjid on me when I teach them what they don't know. So Pakistan, before Pakistan makes any effort to get out of the hole, Pakistan and Egypt, I don't think Sisi will ever do that. Forget Sisi. But still, Imran Khan, you have a chance with him. You have to, first of all, make dinar and dirham legal tender. Meaning, they can be lawfully used as money, legal tender. The rupee still remains. Then any Pakistani laborer is entitled now to ask for his salary to be paid in gold and silver coins. Yeah. Businessmen buying and selling, you can demand, pay me in dinar and dirham. So when you need dinar and dirham, the market will have to supply it. That's what you have businessmen for. You see how very quickly it will come in the market. Then when you have dinar and dirham as your backup, then you can say, we're not paying any more interest and we'll repay the capital sum based on our capacity to repay. Then they will attack your rupee, but they can't attack the dinar and dirham. Okay? From the time one country escaped from the net, the rest of the world will seek to escape that way. And their game will be up. So they probably want to send in the military to take over Pakistan rather than to allow Pakistan to escape. Any other questions? Yes?
Sheikh, regarding the original conversation you had about the juz system in the Quran.
Yeah.
You talk about, obviously, the modern Quran which we recite is, you know, after a certain, so for example, Surah Baqarah is broken up into three juz. Obviously, there's Qurans that are many hundreds of years old. Is there any Quran there where the juz system is not present?
I have never come across in my lifetime any copy of the Quran in which you do not have this juz system, where the first juz ends at Al-Baqarah 141. if there are copies of the Quran which do not have the juz, they must be hundreds of years old and hardly being used there. They're probably museum pieces. But the Qurans which are being used every day by everybody have this juz system, and at the top of the page you see juz awwal, juz thani, juz thalith. Yeah. We need to get a new copy of the Qur'an published with a different system of ajza. Yes, we need to do that. But first let me finish this book and publish it, yeah. Any other questions?
Shaking the earth, the beast of the earth. You mentioned the beast of the earth. It will, in some commentaries they say that it will talk to us.
Dabbatul al taklimuhum and tukallimuhum, based upon the punctuation.
Is it possible? I was thinking, could it be the artificial intelligence robots that they're trying to take over?
The Dabbatul al will have to attack the stuff and destroy this internal capacity, miraculous capacity of the stuff. That is where you have to direct your attention. Because Allah says, تَأْكُلُ مِنْ سَأَتَهُ, that Dabbatul Ard will consume. And when it is consumed, then the stuff collapses, and then the jinn will realize, this is not Sulaiman. This is Dajjal sitting on the throne. And stop working for him. And goodbye Israel on that day. Okay, any more questions? Okay, I have my books at the back. We don't have many titles there. You can take a look if you want, and just bring them up to me and we can autograph them for you. Yes?
Sorry, I've just got a question. Talbot Allah, you mentioned about that, the beast that will come. I was in Saudi last week and somebody mentioned about a hadith. Apologies, I didn't read the hadith, I didn't ask for the reference. Somebody mentioned that the beast will come out from the Mount Safa, and the beast will talk to the human beings that the doors to return to Allah they have closed. I was mistaken, my understanding was that is the Dabbatul Ard, but you mentioned the Dabbatul Ard is the one.
Proper methodology is never to go first to the hadith. Never. Go first to the Qur'an, that is showing respect for the Book of Allah. This is absolute truth. No one can change this. You can close your eyes, this is truth. This you can't say the same for it. Okay? The Hadith and the Qur'an don't have the same status. Proper methodology is when you've gone to the Qur'an, then use the knowledge that you get from the Qur'an to judge the Hadith. If you had done that, you'll never accept that Nabi Muhammad would marry a child. Okay? When we go to the Quran, we get information about Dabbatul Ard. And when we go to the hadith on this subject, we get some very funny hadiths. You can immediately recognize this is nonsense. Yeah, the description of Dabbatul Ard, you'll find in some hadiths will make you laugh. Would make you laugh, yes. I hesitated to put it into my book. I use only one hadith, and I put it in the book, and I said, look, I'm only putting it here in the book so you all can see what nonsense there is. Yeah. When you go to the Quran, then you get a solid knowledge of the subject. Okay, if we have no more questions, رَبَّنَا تَقَبَّلْ مِنَّا إِنَّكَ أَنْتَ السَّمِيعُ الْعَلِيمُ وَتُبْ عَلَيْنَا يَا مُولَانَا إِنَّكَ أَنْتَ التَّوَّابُ الرَّحِيمُ بِرَحْمَتِكَ يَا أَرْحَمَ الرَّاحِمِينَ آمِينَ